choice is in your hands.
Britain decides.
Most of the countries in the world are outside the European Union, and they're doing very nicely, thank you.
Britain decides.
I believe that Britain will be safer, stronger, and better off in a reformed European Union.
You're listening to Britain Decides, the EU referendum debate on TRE.
It's the most profound political decision of my lifetime.
Britain Decides.
With Stephen Ritson.
It's time to speak up.
Hello and welcome to the 10th and final edition of Britain Decides on Talk Radio Europe. For those of you who didn't hear the beginning of Let's Talk with Bill Padley, I'd just like to say I'm sad to have to tell you that Marty Delphine from El País, a correspondent spoken to Talk Radio Europe for many years with us, a lovely guy from El País, the English edition, has sadly passed away. So our thoughts, of course, from all of us at TRE to Marty's family and friends. Now, this, as I say, is the last edition of Britain Decides. On Friday, we're hoping to have a Britain Has Decided. Tomorrow will be pretty much a normal Europe Today programme. I have to tell you, I mentioned it earlier, it may be relevant, not feeling completely au fait health-wise today, and it has actually been suggested that it may be the EU referendum's fault. A migraine with certain sort of intensity, usage of my relatively small brain can trigger these things. So hopefully we'll be able to get through this, but hopefully with your help as well, of course. As you know, this is the last chance before the referendum for you to tell us what you think. You might even convince somebody. There could be very few votes in it. It is proportional, of course. It's not a first-past-the-post system, so every single vote counts on this. And, of course, tomorrow, the United Kingdom will decide whether to stay in the European Union or to leave. When I first thought of saying that to you, I was going to say, tomorrow, the people of the United Kingdom will decide. But then I thought, well, that's not quite right, because I'm a British citizen, but I can't vote. Some of you here can, some can't. Commonwealth citizens and citizens of the Republic of Ireland who are resident in the UK, they can vote. So let's skip. The United Kingdom is going to decide to leave the European Union or not. The question is simple, of course, remain or leave. The consequences, however, are far from simple. I think we can all agree on that. The consequences are just that, consequential. Perhaps we can all agree on one thing, that whatever your nationality, whether you're for in, out, or quite frankly you don't give a damn and are just waiting for this whole tedious Brexit issue to be over, perhaps, arguably, it's the most important, not event in humanity, let's not exaggerate, but it's possibly the most consequential vote, certainly that I can think of. We've had revolutions and natural cataclysms, but as far as a democratic vote is concerned, perhaps this is the most consequential. Now, on the programme today, we're going to start with looking at, well, we were going to say what's the worst that can happen, but maybe that's a little bit negative. What are the consequences going to be on Friday, whatever the result is? We'll be speaking to Joseph Lacey, who's Junior Research Fellow in Politics at University College in Oxford, at the University of Oxford, and he's associated with the Department of Politics and International Relations. He's also been a researcher at Princeton University, one of the well-known Ivy League universities in the United States, at the Department of Politics. Campbell Ferguson, familiar friend of Talk Radio Europe to many of you, of course. He's the director of Survey Spain SL. He's an expert in property. It's a big issue for many people, of course. He's a fellow also of the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors. He's in our studio in Marbella. We'll be speaking to Campbell shortly. And Michael Barton, he's also multifaceted, very talented people on the programme today, Managing Director of Michael Barton Writing Services Limited. You may not have heard of that, but among many things, he was Executive Director of Global Equities, hold something solid, of Goldman Sachs. Not everybody's a fan, of course, but he predicted the 2008 global financial crisis. We'll be asking him about that, among other things. It's about you, so do get yourself in there quickly. 952-78-4000. Rob Humphreys, producing in Marbella, is there to take your calls. 952-78-4000. You don't have to ask us anything specific. We are your voice in Spain. Hopefully, whatever your opinion is, please tell us. 952-78-4000. You can tweet using the hashtag BritainDecides, or you can email studio@talkradioeurope.com, or, of course, indeed, you can leave a message on our forum at talkradioeurope.com. I'm getting some messages already coming in here. Right. What we'll do, There was a debate last night. There is another one tonight. I think it's on Channel 4 tonight. But a debate, the EU referendum, took centre stage at the Wembley Arena. For those of you not familiar in the UK, there's Wembley Stadium, of course, the home of English football, certainly. And next to it, Wembley Arena. Some of your favourite rock stars have performed there. But not so much rock stars, but politicians last night. The two sides traded blows before an audience of 6,000 people for the grand debate. Both campaigns had three representatives each in their respective panels, including the Scottish Conservative leader Ruth Davidson for Remain and the former Tory London mayor Boris Johnson for Leave. First of all, we'll hear from Gisela Stewart, who's Labour, but she wants to leave.
The European Union was a noble dream in the last century, but today it has failed. It has turned into a nightmare.
If we as a country decide to quit, then we're out for good. There's no going
back. Sadiq Khan, Mayor of London.
What benefits are there for small business owners of remaining in the EU, as I can't see any?
We wouldn't have a seat at the table. And if we wanted to trade in the EU, the other countries could put on tariffs and taxes.
The In campaigner, the chair of the In campaign, Sir Stuart Rose from Marks and Spencers, he said, it's not going to be a step change or somebody's going to turn the lights out. And then he went off very, very importantly, wages will go up.
We are the world's fifth biggest economy.
Yes,
and most economies can agree free trade deals within 2 years. The European Union is taking 10 years or never at all. Why? Because 28 member states cannot even organise a takeaway curry, let alone what they're going to do with the rest of the world.
All right.
They lied about the costs of Europe. They lied about Turkey's entrance to Europe. They lied about the European army because we've got a veto over that. They've put these in their leaflets and they've lied about this here tonight too. And it's not good enough. You deserve the truth. You deserve the truth.
My family and I have had first-hand experience recently with the NHS. How would it manage if we left the EU, given the UK's inability to train and retain sufficient doctors and nurses?
What we think should happen is an Australian-style, points-based system.
You might start off with platitudes saying how wonderful immigration is, but your campaign hasn't been Project Fair. It's been Project Hate, as far as immigration is concerned.
Is it a coincidence that the longest period of peace in European history has happened at the same time as the emergence of the European Union?
When the head of Europol, who's a Brit, says we're safer in the EU, I listen. When the head of MI5 and MI6 says we're safer in the EU, I listen. And when all of our major allies, America, Canada, Australia and New Zealand, say we're safer in the EU, I listen. And if it comes to a choice, if it comes to a choice to listening to all of these people, even if they're experts, or listening to these three about who keeps my family safe, I'm going to vote for them every single day of the week and twice on a Sunday. Yeah. Don't risk it.
But as long as the European Union keeps trying to copy what NATO does, if the countries across Europe are not paying their 2% of the GDP, which is the NATO contribution, we will be weakening it.
But and stay and fight, don't quit. Let's stay and persuade our allies to pay the 2%.
Actually,
why are you a quitter?
Okay.
We're better than that.
Okay.
We can do it.
Sadiq.
Be proud.
We heard earlier that the Prime Minister was meant to have got a deal. That a deal amounted to absolutely nothing. It's temporary.
Britain is better off in. You are better off in. There is nothing more positive than having a stronger economy, supporting jobs and opportunities. And that's why I believe you should vote Remain. Thank you.
If we vote Leave and take back control, I believe that this Thursday can be our country's Independence Day.
That was last night. Maybe some of you are with me. I'm not so sure about that. I quite like the rough and tumble of the House of Commons, but perhaps a little bit too much show business last night in that element. I half expected to see Simon Cowell there pressing a buzzer, and this is not an in or out statement. Alan is in Marbella, and as I understand it, you would like the UK to remain. Afternoon, Alan. Welcome. Alan, do you have your radio on? Can you turn your radio off or down, please? The reason I ask is what would happen to the ADAC if you pay less? Right, very difficult to hear you, and I'm sure it's not just me in this, but I got your question, which is a good question. What would happen to VAT if the UK left? I'm no expert. But I understand from Norwegians, we have this deal at the moment. If, for example, if I buy a product in Spain from Germany, for example, or the UK, then I don't pay the VAT. I have to give them my VAT number, which in Spain, if it's an individual, it would be the same as your NIE, your NIE, or your NIF, your fiscal number. That's the same number as well. You give that, and then they'll give you a bill without the VAT. You only pay the VAT if you're actually buying it in the country concerned, whichever one of the countries it is. That's a good question. If anybody out there has something more specific on that, the implications for VAT, then, of course, do give us a call. As we know, as the final end user, IVA in Spain, or VAT, the end user pays it, 21%, the standard rate in Spain. It's cheaper for food, for example, and so than other products. But anyone along the business line, you just pass it along the chain, and we effectively act as tax collectors, I suppose. But if any of you have any answers to that, then give us a call, 952-78-4000. Now, it's 19 minutes past 12. We've got our first guest coming up, standing by, so we'll speak to him in just a sec.
Britain Decides. TRE's coverage of Britain's EU referendum is hosted by Stephen Ridson, with expert guests, speakers from both sides, and your comments. Join in the debate on our online forum at talkradioeurope.com.
It's just gone 12:23 here in mainland Spain, an hour earlier, of course, in the Canary Islands, and indeed in the UK. Now, if you want to call us, 952-78-4000, your point across, we've right at the end at the moment of this. You're great, you lot, I have to say, you Talk Radio Europeans, because I asked the VAT question, and during the break, I'm almost getting bombarded with answers. I'll take this one from Richard, who works in the city in London and trades a lot for a living. Says, from a financial perspective, not a lot will change regarding VAT. Spain will technically regard the supply of a product as an export of goods to a non-EU country. The transaction will be exempt from VAT in Spain. The UK, importing the product, will view it as a taxable event for VAT, and essentially the UK tax rate will be applicable and the VAT levy will be deductible as import VAT. In other words, if you're not the end user, you get the VAT added on and then you just take it off again. You'll claim it back against on your VAT every 3 months, as it is the case in Spain. Now, Dr. Joseph Lacey is a junior research fellow in politics at University College in Oxford. At the University of Oxford, of course, is one of the colleges of the university. He's associated with the Department of Politics and International Relations. He's also been over to the renowned Princeton University, of course, Ivy League University, Department of Politics there. And he joins us on the line now. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Stephen.
Afternoon. Now, just a moment ago, I detected that beautiful Irish accent.
Yes, indeed.
And I asked, in fact, whether you were a British citizen, and you said no, you're a citizen, presumably, of the Republic. But you reminded me, of course, that you can vote. I'm British, I can't vote. You're Irish, you can.
Yeah, as a resident.
As a resident in the UK.
Exactly.
But this is the 10th of our weekly programmes. We've got the referendum tomorrow. We've had occasions where we've had, let's say, experts. The problem is, and sometimes we've had people who are vehemently for one side or the other. Even the term expert has almost become a dirty word for some people now. Don't listen to the experts. Listen to your gut or your feelings. What can you tell us? One of the areas that I wanted to talk with you about is the consequences, what's going to be happening over the next few days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, up to the next... I was going to say walk us through the next 2 years, but maybe we'll start with the next few days.
In the event of a Brexit, you mean...
Sure, yeah, presumably if it's Remain, the markets will maybe go up and be affected, and that'll be pretty much it for now.
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, like, some people have been talking about, okay, so will there be a kind of a relief, rebound in the market or something like this? And there is a kind of, I think in general, there is a view that Remain is likely. You know, the bookmakers have been kind of putting their bets on a Remain. And the idea is that, well, probably the stock market is kind of already pricing that in and kind of expecting it. So it's unlikely, perhaps, that there'll be a significant kind of rebound or anything like this in the market. But one, there's been some very interesting responses in the stock market over the last couple of days. So, you know, this week new polls emerged showing that the Remain camp has just about managed to regain the lead. So in response, this is basically what happened on Monday. You know, sterling rose by 2% against the dollar, which is the biggest rise in a day for several years. The stocks Europe 600, that rose by 3.6%. And then stocks in Ireland jumped by 4.6% too. So I think these
the tragic death, of course, the murder of Jo Cox, the MP, who she was for Remain, and she'd been very publicly vocal about welcoming immigrants and this sort of thing. And obviously, we'll have to leave the courts to decide the circumstances surrounding that particular murder. But we did see a change after that. However,
absolutely.
Joseph, can I just tell you, because this has changed, I've got some live figures in front of me. The bookies are saying, this is maybe about 20 minutes old, 79.37% implied probability of Remain, so 79%, Leave 25%, in other words, where people are putting their money. But the very latest Financial Times poll of polls, it's moved again. Now it's Remain 44%, Leave 45%. Interesting, the difference between the bookies, in other words, where people are putting their money, and when people are just asked, which is usually more reliable?
But this is the thing, so you said it was 45 and 44%. And what these people often forget when looking at these polls is that leaves about 11% undecided. And what we know about undecided voters is that usually on the day they're very conservative and will tend to go for the status quo. So you can very often count on maybe 6 or 7% of that 11% kind of going for the conservative kind of Remain option. So I think this is the kind of thing that the bookies are factoring in, and that we need to consider ourselves as well when kind of taking these forecasts with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's interesting. A few places I've read alleged experts
much maligned these days.
Absolutely. In referenda generally, there's a bias or a tendency towards the status quo, whatever that may be. You found that?
Absolutely, yeah. No, that this is true. There's a very large bias towards the status quo. EU referendums have been a bit more unpredictable. I mean, you've found in several occasions, like for in Ireland, for example, when all of the political parties had been in favour of passing the Nice Treaty, passing the Lisbon Treaty, the people still voted against it. And so these kind of things, they're kind of the most unpredictable, but generally, yeah, like even the people who will often maybe say that they're going to vote against the recommendations will often kind of maybe change their mind on the day. And then, like I say, you also have the undecided voters who are tend to be the most conservative on the day.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the Nice Treaty because Spain happened to have the rotating presidency of the European Union at the time. José María Aznar, who was two prime ministers ago, conservative government in Spain. And I remember him saying, this is pretty accurate, even when I'm paraphrasing and translating, Ireland voted, as you know, and then José María Aznar said something along the lines of, perhaps the Irish people didn't quite understand the question, and then you voted again, and you voted the right way the second
time. Yes, indeed.
Right. Is there any danger or possibility of something like that this time around, do you think?
Well, I think when it came to something like the Nice Treaty in Ireland, or even the Lisbon Treaty, so you're kind of it's a whole package of issues that have been voted on, and it's kind of like, you know, you can kind of highlight any which one. For Ireland, they highlighted the risk of neutrality being affected, or things like abortion laws being affected, and all this kind of thing. So you can kind of pick and choose anything you want from the whole package. Whereas this is a kind of a slightly more refined issue of just kind of in and out. And of course, there's a whole range of issues that have been discussed in the referendum, and you get you've been getting a lot of distortions. I mean, like, you know, we don't need to have followed the debate for too long to know that there have been kind of distortions on both sides. I mean, as one commentator put it recently, the Remain camp have been primarily practicing the politics of fear, whereas the Leave camp, I think it's fair to say, at least some portions of it have been dabbling in the politics of hate and the politics of lies. And this is going to... if not, at least create confusion and kind of increase the likelihood of people voting kind of on emotion rather than rational choices. So in terms of how the debate has gone to inform people, it's kind of, I don't know how high a score it gets compared to other referendums. For instance, maybe the Scottish referendum was a better example of how kind of a relatively rational debate can be had.
Yeah, certainly it's one of those things. People generally do seem to have an opinion, you know, maybe at a later stage. It's a complicated issue, the European Union, even people who follow it on a professional daily basis, but people do seem to have an opinion on it at the moment. I noticed that obviously, presumably, you have an email address which is an ox.ac.uk, of course, university one. But your website is Joseph Lacey, not .com, not .co.uk, but .eu. Should we read anything into that?
No, not at all. A friend actually set this up for me, this website, and it just. This is the domain name. Yeah, I think it was the cheapest one.
Okay, all right. Now, your dissertation, this sounds like a Brussels bureaucrat's dream come true. Your dissertation's called Centripetal Democracy, Democratic Legitimacy and Regional Integration in Belgium, Switzerland and the EU. You try to provide an account of democratic legitimacy and regional integration in multi-level political systems constituted by deep territorial and linguistic divisions. Essentially, we know that we're 28 countries. We're not 28 languages. Of course, some share a common language and some countries indeed have more than one language. Do you think, you know, going forward, if we remain part of the European Union, or even without us, the European Union itself. Is the plan, do you think, regardless of what they may say, that we become more federally integrated? And is that possible with such cultural differences?
I don't know. I think there's books coming out recently called, you know, the end of the Eurocrats' dream and this kind of thing. And I think this is about right. I mean, there has been this federal idea, and even Winston Churchill, I mean, when he first proposed the idea of the European Union, he spoke of a United States of Europe and as being desirable. And I don't know, I think a lot of people have turned away from this idea and been thinking more about... More in terms of cooperation rather than kind of further deep integration. But one thing that I think the EU does need to do is improve its democratic credentials. And this could involve all sorts of things from making the whole commission electable through the parliament in some way, or even giving citizens greater say in how legislation is, the kind of legislation that is passed. There's all sorts of ways of doing this, and the EU maybe explore some of these options. It has a citizens' initiative where it's very much like you can petition the House of Commons. You can do this to the European Commission as well. So there are various things that I think they're of making the EU.
Do you think, regardless of what happens tomorrow and the result we get on Friday, do you think we're seeing a turning point in the European Union, that it's not just Britain? We see parties left and right in various European countries, exacerbated, of course, by the immigration refugee crisis, those poor people, of course, coming to Europe. Are we going to see some significant, proper, real, tangible change towards increasing democracy or perceived democracy and transparency in the European Union? Anything substantial, do you think?
I think one of the big criticisms of, I mean, you've seen it with the Brexit campaign. One of the big criticisms is the lack of democracy in the EU, that the faceless people, you know, the in the last European elections, they tried to tie the election of the Commission President to the European Parliament. Ended up being Jean-Claude Juncker, and he's the President of the Commission, and he claims to be elected, but nobody knows who he is. So there's some kind of relevant critique here to be made, and I think that there are a lot of people working in the EU, especially the Parliament, trying to figure out ways how to bring the whole process closer to the people. And that's an ongoing process. And I think maybe becomes more urgent as these kinds of critiques are made.
In other words, it's anybody's guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Joseph Lacey, Dr. Joseph Lacey from the University of Oxford. Perhaps there's a job in politics for you, and I mean that as a compliment.
Thanks
for joining us at this late hour in this all-important, perhaps the most important vote that we've ever had, just our generation, but in recent times. Thanks for joining us here on TRE. Now, let's go to our studio in Marbella. And we've got Campbell Ferguson there, who's a fellow of the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, among other things. And Campbell, afternoon.
Good afternoon, Stephen.
Hi, Campbell. You? I'm not bad. Well, actually, I have a migraine coming on, thank you. But show must go on, absolutely. I tried to get them to put the referendum back a day until I felt better. Not possible.
Funnily enough, I saw something on Facebook about that they've decided that because of the popularity of it all and all the confusion and traffic, they will have to have the referendum vote over 2 days, that the Leave voters the Remain voters will vote on Thursday, that's tomorrow, and the Leave voters will vote on Friday. I think it was a joke. It was a joke, but it would certainly make the vote on Thursday. It could be to Leave's advantage. Let's put it that way.
That's right. Now you're taking the Michael. Do you remember the Tom Lehrer song, Send in the Marines? Do you remember that song, Tom Lehrer? And he goes something like, let's send in the Marines until somebody we like can get elected. Well, but I think both sides would agree it's a fair debate. I mean, you live in Spain, right?
Yes.
You're an expert in property matters. We've talked a lot about health and pensions and the right to work. Is there any significant way in which, if it's Remain, then things stay as they are. If there's a decision to leave, how will that translate into tangible issues for expats in Spain, would you say?
It's likely to reduce demand. Overall, we've got to remember that the Brits are only one part of the market here, but it's likely to reduce demand because of taxes, that by leaving the EU, there will be higher taxes. And we have to, people have said, they won't do that because the Brits are too valuable to them over here. But I don't necessarily agree with that.
Sorry to interrupt, but you mean when people have the escritura de la propiedad, the deeds to the property in Spain, and you've got, I don't pretend to be an expert at all, but the valor catastral, the sort of the perceived thing, sometimes what it says on paper is not the real sale price or market price of the property, and they're not daft, so as of many years ago, they sort of do a halfway house and will tax you on what they realistically think is the market price. Are you saying that tax will be different for Brits if we vote to leave, compared to, say, a French person or a German?
Well, if you're a non-resident at the moment, if you're an EU member, you pay a tax, I think it's 19%, on income from property. If you are outside of the EU, you pay 25%. So that's instantly you pay, 25% more in tax. That's on income from property. And many, many people buy properties anticipating that their costs, their EB, their comunidad, the various other costs will be covered by rental income. That,
Campbell,
of course, is also going to be affected.
I congratulate you in an unambiguous fact that you just told us. Very rare, rare as rocking horse, the rest of it. But if you say there's that difference, that's a 6% difference. And if it's not going to happen overnight, of course, because whatever happens on Friday, in 2 Fridays' time, we will still be in the European Union with the same terms and conditions as anybody else. We're going to have to squeeze a break in. I just thought I'd let you hear from Michael Gove, who, of course, is on the Leave side. Clearly, the important thing for him is the following. Well, I'll let you hear it. He said it 38 times, the following, during his appearance on Question Time at the end of last week. So clearly, this is what's important for him.
Ultimately, this debate is about control. Within our control, no control. Any control, controlled migration policy, I favour control, just taking control of our own destiny. Control the numbers. Control the numbers. Control the numbers coming here. Control the numbers. Control the numbers controls the numbers. We can't control the numbers. We can take back control. Take back control. Take back control. Take back control. And take back control. And take back control. Taking back control. We can take back control. Take back control. But we want to take back control.
You're listening to Britain Decides, the EU referendum debate on TRE.
12:44 is the time. Went out into the street the other day to ask your fellow expats and talk radio Europeans what they thought.
Nottingham.
Do you live here on holiday?
Yes, I live here, yeah.
How long have you lived here?
Nearly 5 years.
Did you register to vote in the referendum?
No, unfortunately, I missed it. I wish I hadn't missed it because I would have voted to leave.
Why?
Because I think it'd be better for the UK. I know I live here, but it's about the UK, not Spain. I don't think it'll affect the expats out here, but some expats are voting because they live here, but it's not about living here, it's your homeland, which is the UK.
Broadly speaking, of course, not necessarily one issue, but in general swathes, what would be the reason, the issues that would make you want to leave, your vote to leave?
It's because the EU's become more political than it was originally set up for, and it does take away your sovereignty. And takes away a lot of controls on decision making in the UK, which I don't think is right.
From Germany, Cologne. I'm just on holiday here. I think Britain should stay in the European Union. It's economical better for Britain, and also I think they will get a lot of problems with North and South Ireland if they step out.
I'm from Torquay.
Nice. And do you live here? Are you on holiday?
No, I live here.
How long have you lived here?
40 odd years.
So you don't have a vote?
No. If we did.
I can't edit it without in the background to see the Harley Davidsons. If you did, what would you vote and why?
Stay. Because I think we're all united together, you know what I mean? All in a big group. I think they'd be a little bit on their own if they left.
The rest of Europe would be on their own.
No, England.
Oh, okay.
Unscientific, but there you go. That's real people on the streets of Spain. Campbell, there's another point you wanted to make about. Campbell?
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, you're saying some of the other considerations that you want to get in because, of course, obviously it's very last minute now. What are the other considerations for expats?
It's on the leave side. The leave argument is that by freeing ourselves from Europe, we'll be able to act. We'll be able to, as the man said, be able to take back control. However, to be a success outside the single market, to be attractive to businesses and to investment, UK would need to... to be an open European offshore low-cost competitive area for companies. They'd need to have lower taxes on foreign investment than the EU, pay lower wages to unskilled people than elsewhere in Europe, and to cut public spending further to keep taxes down. They'd need to make old people work longer. They'd need a huge influx of immigrants, both skilled and unskilled, to ensure that we had a competitive workforce. We would also need new trade deals to replace the ones that had been abandoned. In Europe, corporate interests are balanced by those of workers, but in any other trade deal, we would need to overlook these. Our regulation would have to be more attractive to corporate elites, not less. This is the problem where the politics of leaving go one way, but the economics go the other way. And as somebody else has said, I should add also, I got much of this from the Times today, which the Times being a Murdoch newspaper, my understanding is it would be voting for leave. And as one person has said...
It's funny you say that, Campbell, because it's hardly surprising that many people are a bit confused about this because it would seem that Rupert Murdoch is himself because the Times is for leave, but the Sunday Times is for remain.
Yeah, well, this was from the Times today. But one person said, and I think I'd be concerned myself, if Leave win, I'm even more concerned as to what the people in the country will become as the disaster unfolds. And that's my own feeling. We're talking not just on the UK, though. We're talking on Europe and its effects on Europe, and we're talking on its effects on the world. And this is why everybody is getting worked up about it, that if the UK leaves, the whole European thing falls apart, whereas if the UK votes to stay, that'd be a big shot in confidence in the European thing, and I think could save it and help move it forward, with the UK taking control of part, or being part of the control of that.
Just on the specifics of the property issue we were talking about before, yep. John in Mijas on the Costa del Sol says, we were talking about the difference that you mentioned, that 19% tax certain types of property transaction, let's say, and 25% of your house from outside the European Union. So that's immediately, that's a 6% difference. But John says, but only for the few who actually declare that income. I know, I don't know if I should say this on air. Let me put it this way, I'll say it, nobody else, is that Spain has been an ignoble tradition of people putting some of it on the books, and then there were notaries all over the country who mysteriously have to leave the room for a moment to, you know, while the briefcases swap hands and that. So, of course, that's obviously one issue there. But, of course, on the declared money is what we're talking about. Now, Rob, we're waiting to get Michael Barton on the line. Is he with us? It would appear not.
No, Stephen, I can call him now if that's okay. Okay,
yeah, sure, yeah, because we're short on time.
The tax thing and on the property thing, that is much, much less now than it used to be. And also the income from rentals, that is being researched hugely, that by the Junta de Andalucía, they've taken on many more inspectors who are checking on the internet. They're they're pretending to be people interested in property. They're answering adverts and various things like that. And then when they arrive at the door and the people say, well, this is it, they basically say, well, you're nicked. And then they go back through all the old electricity bills, they do all that sort of thing, and people are going to be fined huge amounts for rentals that they haven't declared. And then in addition to the fine, there'll be big taxes. So that those days are passing by, I'm afraid, or have passed by. It's now become a very dangerous thing to do, not to declare that you have rentals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Stephen, if it's a disappointment to yourself. But
I don't think it affects me directly, but yes, that's right. In order to encourage people to rent, if you've got empty property, then, of course, there's not a question of just it accruing no tax. Let's just go, while we're waiting for Michael Barton, let's just go back out into the street to see what your neighbours think.
London.
And do you think we should leave, stay, and why?
Leave.
Why?
Leave. Too many people in the island. It's a little island, and we can't keep taking right. more and more in.
I come from Germany, in Cologne. I think Europe opinion stay in Europe. In Europe.
Why?
I think that it's for the business and for the people better.
Well, originally from Manchester. We're now living in the Wigan area, which isn't far away from Manchester. Because I spend more time in England than here. We've only just started coming over such a lot here. I think we should come out. All our friends that live here say they should stay in because they're worried about the pensions.
There you go. Just some thoughts from people on the streets on Sunday. That's on the Costa Blanca, which is where I am. Michael Barton joins us now. He worked in financial markets for 25 years. He was executive director of global equities at Goldman Sachs. And he apparently predicted the 2008 global financial crisis. Michael, good afternoon. Why didn't you let the rest of us know?
At the time, I was actually working at an independent financial advisor in the east of England. And I just joined the firm, actually. And in our first monthly meeting that I was involved in, I was asked what I thought that our client should do, and I said, sell everything. And everybody looked at me in horror, and the chief exec turned around and said, well, actually, we can't do that. We can't advise that because we have to remain within an advised portfolio to protect ourselves. Needless to say, I sold everything.
The supposed experts in the City or Wall Street, that there's generally a lemming attitude, as there are in many aspects of life. Nobody wants to be the first person to stick their nose out into the icy wind, perhaps, and be wrong. A good example is the last general election. The polls were all wrong, and it seemed that when some polls were actually accurate in predicting the Conservative win that was, they thought it was so out of kilter with the others that they didn't dare to say. Was there a bit of that?
Yeah, there's always a bit of that. And you're absolutely right. No one wants to be the first person to stick their head above the parapet. There was a guy in BDF Unit Trust Financial Advice in the early 2000s, a guy called Tony Dye, who took all of his funds, billions of pounds worth of funds, out of the market. He ended up being sacked. Because his clients had supposedly lost money, and he was sacked about 3 months before the markets crashed in 2000 through the dot-com bubble. So there is definitely a bit of that.
Goldman Sachs has been mentioned quite a few times. In a way, unlikely people. Nigel Farage used to work in the City, we're told, and you would think that Goldman Sachs and that type of company, not everyone's your fan, as you know, such organisations, but he's using you as the demons. Look, they were wrong about the euro. Goldman Sachs said we should join the euro, and look what would have happened had we done that. Has he got a point?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think if you look throughout history, the ability of experts to actually forecast the future is pretty, pretty poor. In all realms of life and in all realms of industry and economics, experts get things wrong regularly. So, you know, we've got the Treasury, for instance, are forecasting doom and gloom and economic disaster. They haven't made a correct prediction for, I think, it's 14 or 15 years.
The only thing I can predict, I'm afraid, is that time and the hour runs through the roughest day, as I think it was the Scottish play, that one. That's one for you, Campbell. My thanks to Joseph Lacey, Campbell Ferguson, Michael Barton, and, of course, Rob Humphreys in Marbella, and to all of you. Tomorrow is the big day. Tomorrow we'll have general news, and on Friday we can talk about what you think of the result. That's all for today, this last edition of Britain Decides here on Talk Radio Europe with me, Stephen Ritson. Bye-bye.